This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine typing a prompt into an AI, and your request is just instantly beamed like 2,000 miles away to a data center in the middle of a desert.
Right, just completely bypassing the local servers.
Exactly. And all because, I don't know, the wind happens to be blowing harder there at that exact second, making the electricity, you know, a fraction of a cent cheaper.
It sounds totally made up.
It really does sound like science fiction. But that test was successfully run this past July. And today, we are going to look at the sweeping blueprint behind it.
Yeah, it's a really massive shift we're looking at.
We're basically unpacking a highly detailed intelligence briefing. It's dated July 28, 2026, and it covers this rapidly evolving ecosystem of, well, AI, robotics, semiconductors, and telecom infrastructure.
It is an incredibly dense set of sources, honestly. But, you know, it paints a picture that is absolutely critical to understand, regardless of what industry you happen to be working in right now.
Yeah, and I want to set the stage right up front about where this information is coming from.
Good call.
So the source material and the expert commentary we're working from today, it was provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Right.
He compiled this briefing, and reading through it, you realize this isn't just, you know, a laundry list of tech updates or isolated press releases.
No, not at all.
It shows how a global superpower is attempting to export not just a single product, but an entire integrated technological system.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the sheer scale of the coordinated effort here is staggering.
It really is. And, you know, we have to begin by looking at the connections here. My goal today is to help thread the needle between what might seem like isolated tech news.
Like a product launch here, a local IPO there.
Yeah, exactly. To connect those to the profound global shifts they represent.
Right.
We need to look at how the software, the physical hardware, and the underlying infrastructure are being built to function as a single organism.
Well, let's start with the software then, or really, you know, the brain of the operation.
Okay, yeah, let's do it. The briefing zeroes in on the release of Moonshot's Kimi K3 model, and the numbers attached to this launch are just, they're hard to wrap your head around.
They are massive.
Right. It was announced on July 16th as a 3T class model with 2.8 trillion parameters and the 1 million token context window.
Which is just a huge jump.
It is. But before we go further, can we ground that jargon a bit? Like, what does a 1 million token context window actually mean for the person using it?
Sure. So, think of a token as roughly a piece of a word. A 1 million token context window essentially means you could feed the AI a dozen thick textbooks all at once in a single prompt.
Oh, wow. All at once.
Yeah. And it could remember, analyze, and cross-reference every single page simultaneously to give you an answer.
That is insane. And the parameters.
Right. The 2.8 trillion parameters acts like the artificial synapses in a brain, I guess.
Yeah.
The more parameters, the more nuanced and complex its reasoning can theoretically be.
Okay, so we have this incredibly complex brain, but then literally by July 27, just days after it was announced, they moved it to an open weight distribution.
Yeah, that was the real shocker.
They essentially released the underlying architecture for developers to use for free, but that scale immediately sparked controversy.
Oh, massive controversy.
Yeah, specifically the U.S. started accusing the developers of a practice called distillation.
Right, and distillation has become one of the biggest flashpoints in the AI arms race right now.
So is distillation basically like copying the smartest kid's homework to train a younger student rather than making the younger student study from scratch?
That's a really good way to put it.
Like taking the outputs of an established trillion parameter model to quickly train a brand new one.
Right, exactly. And to stretch that analogy, you know, it is about saving the tuition money.
Ah, the cost.
Yeah, instead of spending the immense time and computational power, meaning millions of dollars in electricity and server time, to learn everything from raw, unstructured data, a newer model learns by mimicking the highly refined answers of an advanced model.
Right, I see.
And U.S. authorities have raised alarms that Chinese models might be utilizing this shortcut by distilling from American platforms.
Now, obviously, China completely rejects that claim.
Yes, very strongly.
And as we get into these geopolitical tensions, you know, we need to be totally clear to you, the listener, we are looking at this strictly through the lens of lawyer Kyungjin Kim's briefing to understand the pieces on the board.
Right, absolutely.
Our goal here isn't to validate either Washington or Beijing's political stances. We are just dissecting the strategic realities as they exist.
Exactly. And from a strictly mechanical standpoint, what's fascinating here is that The global battleground has completely shifted.
How so?
Well, a few years ago, the race was simply about who could physically make a large language model.
Just getting one to work.
Right. Now the race is about who has a domestic ecosystem strong enough to survive, giving away its most valuable asset, which is the model weights, for free.
Wow. So pushing Kimi K3 into the open weight arena is a calculated disruptor then?
It is. It's an aggressive play against the closed proprietary systems favored by U.S. tech giants. They want to dominate the foundation of the global open source community.
But wait, I want to push back on that strategy for a second.
Sure.
Even if the weights are free to download, actually running inference on a nearly 3 trillion parameter model requires a mountain of server space.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. An average startup can't afford the hardware to run that on their own. So how does open sourcing it actually benefit the creators?
That is the brilliant trap of the ecosystem. You give away the blueprint for free, knowing that most companies can't run it locally.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, so they end up renting cloud computing space and hardware from the very same tech ecosystem that provided the model. It hooks foreign developers into a dependency on their infrastructure.
Which comes with some intense legal headaches for the businesses caught in the middle.
Oh, definitely.
Following lawyer Kunjin Kim's commentary, the fallout here is incredibly complex. Let's say you are a tech company in Europe, and you decide to integrate one of these open-weight Chinese models because it is powerful and seemingly free.
You have to be very careful.
Right. The briefing warns you are walking into a legal minefield. You need contracts with rock-solid clauses covering model replacement, absolute guarantees regarding the source of the training data, and strict rules against subdelegation.
Yes, that last one is huge.
I assume subdelegation means hiring a third-party vendor to tweak the model.
Yes. If you hire an outside contractor to fine-tune that AI and they inadvertently violate a licensing agreement or utilize restricted data, you are suddenly exposed.
Wow. Just from an outside vendor.
Exactly. If the U.S. drops a sudden sanction based on those distillation accusations, and your contract doesn't give you a legal immediate way to rip that model out of your tech stack, your entire company could be paralyzed overnight.
That's terrifying for a business, but, you know, an AI brain, no matter how smart, is trapped in a server unless it has a body to manipulate the physical world.
Right, it needs to interact with the real world.
And that drives us directly into the realm of robotics. The briefing notes a company called Ziyuan Innovation, also known as Agibot, beginning its Hong Kong IPO process on July 24.
Yeah, the timing on that is interesting.
But more interestingly, it highlights insights from the World Artificial Intelligence Conference, the WAIC. There has been a fundamental shift in how the industry views these machines.
A very necessary shift, I would say.
Investors apparently no longer care how human-like a robot looks. They only care how reliably it finishes a task.
We are finally moving out of the novelty phase. The capital markets are forcing the hype out of the equation.
I have to play devil's advocate here, though.
Go for it.
Wait, we've seen viral videos of dancing robots for years and back-flipping humanoids, right?
Oh, yeah. Boston Dynamics and all that.
Yeah. They always look amazing on a stage. Isn't this push for an IPO just more hype wrapped in a different package?
I get that. It is easy to be cynical about the viral videos, but institutional investors are now demanding hardcore, unglamorous metrics.
Like what?
The WAIC revealed that funding now hinges on repeatable task success rates. If a robot is supposed to weld a joint or sort delicate packages, does it fail one time in 100 or one time in 1,000,000?
Right. The real-world reliability.
Exactly. They want to see robust data collection systems, in-house parts, and most importantly, real-world delivery scenarios. The days of getting funded just for a cool demo are over. They want fleets of these machines working on actual factory floors.
And that changes the competitive landscape entirely, especially for neighboring tech hubs like Korea or Japan.
It completely flips the script.
If you are a robotics company, you are now competing against these firms in environments where the cost of failure is astronomical. You know, places like heavy manufacturing, complex logistics, and eventually elder care.
Yeah, human lives are on the line.
You cannot just compete on having the smartest software anymore.
No, to survive, competitors have to build deep defensive moats in the physical hardware components. We are talking about dominating the market for the pieces that actually make these robots reliable.
What kind of pieces?
Things like high torque reducers, hyper-accurate sensors, ultra-precision parts.
Let's break that down for a second. A high torque reducer, that's basically the physical joint of the robot, right?
Essentially, yes. It is the gear system that controls the robot's movement and strength.
Okay.
If a reducer snaps on a factory floor, It could halt a million-dollar assembly line, or worse, injure a worker. That is why rigorous safety certifications are the real battleground.
It's all about trust.
Exactly. If a competitor can prove their hardware is certifiably safer and more reliable in a high failure cost environment, they can defend their market share against cheaper, mass-produced alternatives.
Okay, so we have the AI brains getting incredibly complex and fleets of autonomous robot bodies getting ready to hit the factory floor. But scaling that, I mean, running trillions of AI parameters across thousands of moving robots in real time, that requires an unprecedented amount of hardware.
A staggering amount, yeah.
Which brings us to the semiconductor space. We saw the IPO of the Chinese DRAM maker CXMT on the Shanghai Star Market on July 27. And the numbers here are just mind-bending.
Yeah, they really are.
It became the Star Market's largest IPO ever, raising 57.9 billion RMB. That pushed the company's market cap over 3 trillion RMB.
It is a phenomenal amount of capital, and it signifies a major shift in how memory chips are categorized.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. We always hear about GPUs, graphics processing units being the engine of AI.
Right. Everyone focuses on NVIDIA and the GPUs.
Exactly. But high bandwidth memory, or HBM and DRAM, are like the fuel lines. Without big enough fuel lines, the engine chokes. It just starves for data.
That is spot on. And to stretch that fuel line analogy further, you know, if you have a tiny fuel line, your massive engine overheats while waiting for the gas to arrive.
If that makes sense.
That is the exact latency bottleneck that advanced memory solves. Lowering the training and inference costs of these sprawling large models requires incredibly fast, sophisticated memory chains.
Because the GPU is just sitting there waiting otherwise.
Right. The GPU processes the math, but it has to constantly pull data from memory to do so.
Yeah.
The CXMT IPO proves that China is no longer treating memory chips as mere consumer electronic goods, like, you know, something you would put in a budget smartphone.
Right.
They were treating memory as sovereign national AI infrastructure.
So raising nearly 58 billion RMB is not just a successful business going public. That is a state-backed mission to own the fuel lines entirely.
And this severely threatens the bargaining power of foreign memory suppliers.
I can imagine.
Yeah. If China can produce sufficient memory domestically to feed its own AI servers and robotics terminals, global suppliers lose a vital lever. To survive, those foreign suppliers definitely need to hold on to their technological leads.
And that lead is mostly in something called advanced packaging, right?
Yes, that's the key differentiator right now.
Why is that so difficult to master? Like, why can't a competitor just copy the design?
Because it is a brutal physics problem.
Really? Physics?
Yeah. Advanced packaging involves stacking microscopic memory chips on top of each other, almost like a skyscraper, and running microscopic elevators data channels between them.
Oh, wow.
And when you stack chips that closely, they generate immense heat. If your manufacturing process isn't absolutely perfect, the heat destroys the chip.
So the failure rate is huge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mastering those yield rates and locking in the verification ecosystems for HBM takes years of trial and error. If foreign companies lose that edge, they lose the market.
But, you know, even if you have the perfect software, the sturdiest robots and all the memory chips in the world, you hit a physical wall that you can't engineer away.
Right, the power.
Exactly. Running AI at this scale consumes a staggering amount of electricity. We are already seeing data centers globally straining local power grids to the breaking point.
It's a huge bottleneck everywhere.
So how is China solving the energy bottleneck? That brings us to the computing power synergy test conducted by Shanghai Electric, Shanghai Telecom, and Alibaba on July 22.
This might be one of the most consequential pieces of data in the entire briefing.
Really?
Yeah, because it solves a problem the rest of the world is just beginning to face.
So in this test, they took 288,040 AI inference requests and dynamically shifted them across data centers in Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Anhui.
Just moving the load around in real time.
Right. They linked the computing load directly with regional electricity availability. And by doing this, they dropped the power cost per token by roughly 31%.
That is a massive cost reduction.
So they are basically treating data and electricity as the exact same utility, like routing internet traffic to wherever the wind happens to be blowing hardest.
Yes, exactly.
But my question is about the physics of that. If I type a prompt in Shanghai and my request gets routed thousands of miles away to Shenzhen just because the solar farm there is producing cheap power that afternoon, doesn't that create a ton of lag?
You would think so, right? But data traveling through fiber optic cables moves at nearly the speed of light.
Oh.
So the time it takes for the data to travel those 2,000 miles is negligible compared to the time it takes the GPUs to actually compute the answer.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so the end user doesn't notice a delay, but the system operator saves a fortune in electricity costs.
If we step back, that's just a brilliant way to optimize a grid.
It is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it changes our fundamental understanding of what a telecom company even is.
How do you mean?
In the West, we generally think of telecom companies as businesses that sell network bandwidth. You know, you pay for the pipe.
Right, internet service providers.
Exactly. But Chinese telecom companies are evolving into unified public infrastructure providers. They're building a system that schedules the network, the computing power, and the electricity grid as a single, indivisible bundle.
It is wild to think about. It's like if your internet provider also controlled the regional power grid and the server farms, optimizing everything millisecond by millisecond.
Yes.
And doing so drops the cost of processing AI by a third.
The relevance here is profound for global markets. If competing global telecom companies don't adopt this model or, you know, figure out how to replicate this level of synergy, they will simply be outpaced by the sheer cost efficiency of edge AI processing.
Because it's just too cheap.
You cannot compete on a global scale if your opponent's baseline operational cost is 30% lower than yours by default.
No, you can't. But none of this engineering or physics happens in a political vacuum.
No, definitely not.
We have to look at the rules of the game. The briefing highlights a dual approach from China on regulating and nurturing AI.
Right, the dual approach is key.
On one hand, Beijing issued 10 measures for smart agents, which are AI systems that can execute multi-step tasks, independently focusing on Agent OS and city pilots on July 23.
Mm-hmm.
They also pushed the APEC Chengdu Declaration, aiming to set global AI norms. But at the exact same time, the U.S.-China tech war is escalating.
It's definitely heating up. U.S. officials threatened new sanctions against Chinese AI firms, prompting official pushback from China's Ministry of Commerce on July 27, claiming the U.S. has, quote, no factual or legal basis.
Right.
And the Financial Times reported China may restrict the export of its own model weights and chip designs in retaliation.
Yeah.
Now, again, to our listeners, we are maintaining strict neutrality here regarding the political tensions.
Yes, 100%.
We're focusing entirely on the strategic realities reported in the text. So what does this all mean? How can any global business survive between these two massive regulatory hammers?
It's incredibly tough. What we're seeing is a textbook example of what we can call mirror image regulation.
Mirror image regulation?
Yeah. Both sides are actively mapping out and targeting the other's weak links.
Okay, so how does that play out?
Well, the U.S. targets China's access to advanced chips and training methods. China targets the West's reliance on certain raw materials and, increasingly, access to its vast domestic market and these emerging open-weight models.
So if you're a mid-sized enterprise just trying to do business, you're stuck.
You are. And this is where lawyer Kung Jin Kim's commentary provides a crucial roadmap. Companies are stuck right in the middle of this mirror image warfare. Survival now completely depends on the fine print.
It always comes down to the lawyers, doesn't it?
It really does. Hyper-specific contract clauses are no longer just legal boilerplate. They are corporate life support.
Well, he specifically points out re-export controls, local maintenance protocols, and strict rules on log storage to minimize dispute risks.
Yes, those are critical.
Let's unpack the log storage part. Why does saving a log of your AI prompts matter in a geopolitical dispute?
Because of auditing.
Ah, right.
If the U.S. government suspects your company used an AI model to process restricted data, or if the Chinese government demands to know how their model is being applied abroad, those server logs are your only defense.
You have to prove what you did.
Exactly. You have to be able to cryptographically prove exactly what data went in and out. If you don't minimize your dispute risks on paper before you plug a single cable in, you are exposing your entire operation to catastrophic regulatory action from either side.
It really forces you to view technology not just as code, but as a huge liability.
It does. It is a phenomenal synthesis of the current reality. If we look at lawyer Kung Jin Kim's overarching thesis, it is that China is moving on three synchronized fronts simultaneously.
Okay, let's summarize those.
First, the AI miles, like Kimi K3, are spreading outward into the global open source community.
Right.
Second, enormous capital is gathering inward to build self-reliant hardware, like the CXMT memory chips.
The fuel lines.
Exactly. And third, the rules of the game are being written proactively, both at the local city level and at the diplomatic level.
It is the export of a total system. It is not just selling a robot. It is selling the software that runs the robot, the chips that process its thoughts, the dynamic energy grid that powers its servers, and the legal framework that governs its existence.
Perfectly said. It is a fully integrated public infrastructure model, and it is moving very fast.
And that is why this briefing is so critical for you listening right now. Whether you are working in tech development, managing global supply chains, practicing corporate law, or honestly, just trying to stay informed.
Yeah, it touches everything.
Understanding this integrated public infrastructure model is the key to predicting the next 5 years of the global economy. You cannot look at a new AI model, a robotics IPO, or a chip embargo in isolation anymore. They are all gears in the exact same issue.
Everything is connected. The software, the physical hardware, the energy grid, and the law. You have to watch the entire board.
Which leaves me with one final provocative thought I want you to chew on as we wrap up today.
Okay, let's hear it.
We have talked extensively about this deep integration. If AI, robotics, and the power grid all merge into one inseparable state-run utility like water or electricity, what happens to the very concept of a private tech company?
Well, that's a great question.
Will the future internet fracture into competing national operating systems where your data literally can't cross borders? Something to think about next time you ask an AI a simple question.
Definitely.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep digging, keep questioning the narrative, and stay curious. See you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kai Eun-jin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow daily AI news from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.